వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సభప్రభా నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా శివశక్త్యాయుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం న చేదేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి అత స్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
Shri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning, greetings, and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday on the 1st of October 2020, and with me Team Radio Sai Sunil, welcoming you to this morning segment, Divine Glory on Thursday Live from the studios of the Sri Satya Sai Media Center here at Prashanti Nilay. At the outset, let me first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. What is that state of God intoxication that the great devotees of the Lord experienced, that we all must strive to reach? Bhagwan lovingly explains to us today, and I quote, "You call yourselves devotees, so I shall talk to you about the dharma of people who seek to acquire devotion. No one can become a devotee by naming themselves so, nor by others calling them so. Devotion involves dedication, with nothing held back. Not even a wisp of ego should remain. His command alone counts. His will prevails. Like a drunkard, a devotee has no sense of honor or decency, pride or conceit. The devotee is a drunkard, matta, a mad person, unmatta, unconcerned with all that is unrelated to the ideal. The devotee is deaf to the call of hunger and thirst, misses steps in logic, and calculates wrongly while dealing in the marketplace. Narada says that those full of liquor of ignorance stumble after the shadows of the world, while those drunk with nectar of wisdom never move away from the highest, which they have discovered as themselves." Unquote. This was taken from a divine discourse delivered by Bhagwan on January 25th, 1963. Dear listener, the time right now in our studios is 51 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I have lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book Sri Sai Satcharitra by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by a conversation with late Srimati Jayalakshmi Gopinath, the former principal and the warden of Anantapur campus of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And in conversation with her is Dr. Rajeshwari Patel, and this conversation was taken from our archives. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemad Pant. We are thankful to Vasanti Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book, and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a happy, holy and a blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. But before signing off, let me also bring this to your kind attention that starting next Thursday, that is on the 8th of October 2020, we'll be having a new revised schedule for Thursday Live. So please check our Thursday Live page for more updates. Thank you and Samasta Lokah Sukhino Bhavantu.
Bhimaji Patil. One Bhimaji Patil of Narayan Gaon, Taluka Jinnar, District Pune, suffered in the year 1909 from a severe and chronic chest disease, which ultimately developed into tuberculosis. He tried all sorts of paths, but to no effect. Losing all hope, he ultimately prayed to God, "O Lord Narayan, help me now." It is a well-known fact that when our circumstances are well, we do not remember God. But when calamities and adversities overtake us, we are reminded of Him. So, Bhimaji now turned to God. It occurred to him that he should consult Mr. Nana Sahib Chandorkar, a great devotee of Baba, in this regard. So he wrote to him a letter giving all the details of his malady and asking for his opinion. In reply, Mr. Nana Sahib wrote to him that there was only one remedy left, and that was to have recourse to Baba's feet. Relying on Mr. Nana Sahib's advice, he made preparations for going to Shirdi. He was brought to Shirdi and taken to the masjid and placed before Baba. Mr. Nana Sahib and Shama were present there, and Baba pointed out that the disease was due to the previous evil karma and was not disposed to interfere. But the patient cried out in despair that he was helpless and sought refuge in him as he was his last hope and prayed for mercy. Baba's heart melted and he said, "Stay, cast off your anxiety. Your sufferings have come to an end. However oppressed and troubled one may be, as soon as he steps in the masjid, he is on the pathway to happiness. The fakir here is very kind and he will cure the disease and protect all with love and kindness." The patient used to vomit blood every 5 minutes. But there was no vomiting in the presence of Baba. From the time Baba uttered the words of mercy, the malady took a favorable turn. Baba asked him to stay in Bhima Bhai's house, which was not a convenient and fit place. But Baba's order had to be obeyed. While he was staying there, Baba cured him by 2 dreams. In the first dream, he saw himself as a boy, suffering the severe pain of a flogging which he received for not reciting his poetry lesson before his class master. In the second dream, someone caused him intense pain by rolling a stone up and down over his chest. With the pain thus suffered in dream, his cure was complete and he went home. He then often came to Shirdi, gratefully remembering what Baba did for him and prostrated before him. Baba also did not expect anything from devotees but remembrance, unswerving faith and devotion. People in Maharashtra always celebrate Satyanarayan Puja in their homes every fortnight or month. But it was this Bhimaji Patil who started a new Sai Satyavrata Puja instead of Satyanarayan Vrata Puja in his house when he returned to his village. Bala Ganpat Shimpi. Another devotee of Baba, by name Bala Ganpat Shimpi, suffered much from a malignant type of malaria. He tried all sorts of medicines and decoctions, but in vain. The fever did not reduce at all, and he ran to Shirdi and fell on Baba's feet. Baba gave him a strange recipe, in this case as follows. "Give a black dog some morsels of rice mixed with curd in front of the Lakshmi temple." Bala did not know how to execute this recipe, but no sooner he went home, he found rice and curd. After mixing them together, He brought the mixture near the Lakshmi temple when he found a black dog waving its tail. He placed the curd and rice before the dog. The dog ate it. And strange to say, Bala got rid of his malaria. Bapu Saheb Bhoti. Sriman Bapu Saheb Bhoti suffered once from dysentery and vomiting. His cupboard was full of patent drugs and medicines, but none of them had any effect. Bapu Saheb got very weak on account of purgings and vomiting and therefore was not able to go to the masjid for Baba's darshan. Baba then sent for him and made him sit before him and said, "Now, take care. You should not purge anymore." And gestured with his index finger. "The vomiting must also stop," he said. Now look at the power of Baba's words. Both the maladies disappeared and Bhoti felt well. On another occasion, he had an attack of cholera and suffered from severe thirst. Dr. Pillai tried all sorts of remedies but could give him no relief. Then he went to Baba and consulted him as what to drink that would allay his thirst and cure the disease. Baba prescribed an infusion of almonds, walnuts, pistachio, boiled in sugared milk. This would be considered a cause for fatal aggravation of the disease by any other doctor or physician. But in implicit obedience to Baba's order, the infusion was administered, and strange to say, the disease was cured. Alandi Swami. A Swami from Alandi with a desire to take Baba's darshan came to Shirdi. He suffered from a severe pain in his ear which prevented him from getting the sleep. He was operated for this, but it served no purpose. The pain was severe and he did not know what to do. While he was returning, he came to take Baba's leave when Shama requested Baba to do something for the pain in the Swami's ear. Baba comforted him saying, "Allah achha karega." The Swami then returned to Pune and after a week sent a letter to Shirdi stating that the pain in his ear had subsided, though the swelling was there, and in order to get the swelling removed, he went to Mumbai for an operation, but the surgeon on examining the ear said no operation was necessary. Such was the wonderful and potent effect of Baba's words. Kaka Mahajani. Another devotee named Kaka Mahajani suffered once from diarrhea. In order that there should be no break in his services to Baba, Kaka kept a pot with water in some corner of the masjid, and whenever there was a call, he would go out. As Sai Baba knew everything, Kaka did not inform him of his disease, thinking that Baba would of his own cure it soon. The work of constructing the pavement in front of the masjid was permitted by Baba, but when the actual work began, Baba got wild and shouted out loudly. Everybody ran away, and as Kaka was also doing the same, Baba caught hold of him and made him sit there. In the confusion that followed, somebody left there a small pouch of ground nuts. Baba took a handful of ground nuts, rubbed them in his hands, blew away the skin, and gave the clean nuts to Kaka and made him eat them. Scolding and cleaning the nuts and making Kaka eat them went on simultaneously. Baba himself ate some of them. Then, when the nuts were finished, Baba asked him to fetch water as he felt thirsty. Kaka went and brought a pitcher full of water. Baba drank some water and made Kaka also drink it. Baba declared, "Now your diarrhea has stopped, and you may attend to the work of the pavement." In the meanwhile, other persons who had run away returned and started the work, and Kaka, whose motions had stopped, also joined them. Are groundnuts medicines for diarrhea? According to current medical opinion, groundnuts would aggravate the disease and not cure it. The true medicine in this, as in other cases, was Baba's word. Dattopant of Harda. A gentleman from Harda, by name Dattopant, suffered from stomach ache for about 14 years. None of the remedies gave him any relief. Then, on hearing Baba's fame that he cures diseases by sight, he ran to Shirdi and fell at Baba's feet. Baba looked at him and gave him his blessings. When Baba placed his hand on his head, and when he got Baba's udi with blessings, he felt relieved and there was no further trouble about the malady. Towards the end of this chapter, three cases are cited in footnotes. Madhav Rao Deshpande suffered from piles. Baba gave him decoction of Sonamukhi, which is senna pods. This relieved him. Then, after 2 years, the trouble recurred, and Madhav Rao took the same decoction without consulting Baba. The result was that the disease aggravated, but later on was cured by Baba's grace. Kaka Mahajani's elder brother, Gangadhar Pant, suffered for many years from stomach pain. Hearing Baba's fame, he came to Shirdi and requested Baba to cure him. Baba touched his belly and said, "God will cure." From that time, there was no stomach pain and he was completely cured. Nana Sahib Chandurkar also once suffered from acute stomach pain. He was restless the whole day and night. Doctors administered syringes which produced no effect. Then he approached Baba, who told him to eat barfi mixed with ghee. This recipe gave him complete relief. All these stories show that the real medicine that cured the various diseases permanently was Baba's word and grace, and not any medicines or drugs. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 14. Ratanji Wadia of Nanded, Saint Moli Sahib, Dakshina Mimansa. In the last chapter, we described how Baba's word and grace cured many incurable diseases. Now we shall describe how Baba blessed Mr. Ratanji Wadia and gave him an issue. The life of this saint is naturally sweet. His various doings, eating, walking, and his natural sayings are also sweet. His life is bliss incarnate. Sai gave the bliss to his devotees as a means of remembrance. He gave them various stories of duty and action, which ultimately led to their true religion. His object may be that people should live happily in this world, but they should be ever cautious and achieve the object of their life, which is self-realization. We get human body as a result of merits in past births, and it is worthwhile that, with its aid, we should attain devotion and liberation in this life. So we should never be lazy, but always on the alert to gain our goal of life. If you hear the leelas of Sai daily, you will always see him. Day and night, you will remember him in your mind. When you assimilate Sai in this way, your mind will lose its fickleness, and if you go on in this manner, it will be finally merged in pure consciousness. Ratanji of Nanded. Now let us come to the main story of this chapter. In Nanded, in the Nizam state, there lived a Parsi mill contractor and trader by name Ratanji Shapurji Wadia. He had amassed a large amount of money and had acquired fields and lands. He had cattle, horses, conveyance, and was very prosperous. In all outward appearances, he looked very happy and contented, but inwardly, he was not so. Providential dispensation is such that no one in this world is completely happy. And rich Ratanji was no exception to this. He was liberal and charitable, gave food and clothing to the poor, and helped everyone in various ways. The people took him to be a good and happy man. But Ratanji thought himself miserable, as he had no issue, male or female, for a very long time. Just as kirtan without love or devotion, song without rhythmical accompaniments, Brahman without the sacred thread, proficiency in all the arts without common sense, pilgrimage without repentance, and ornamentation without a necklace, are futile and useless, so is a householder without an issue. Ratanji always brooded on this matter and said in his mind, "Would God be ever pleased to grant me a son?" He thus looked morose and did not relish his food. Day and night he was enveloped with anxiety as to whether he would be ever blessed with a son. He had a great regard for Das Ganu Maharaj. He saw him and opened his heart before him. Das Ganu advised him to go to Shirdi and take Baba's darshan, fall at his feet and seek his blessings and pray for an issue. Ratanji liked the idea and decided to go to Shirdi. After some days, he went to Shirdi, took Baba's darshan and fell at his feet. Then opening a basket, he took out a beautiful garland of flowers and placed it around Baba's neck and offered him a basket of fruits. With reverence, he then sat near Baba and prayed to him, saying, "Many persons who find themselves in difficult situations come to you, and you relieve them immediately. Hearing this, I have anxiously sought your feet. Please do not disappoint me." Sai Baba then asked him for dakshina of 5 rupees, which Ratanji intended to give, but added that he had already received 1 rupee and 16 anas from him and that he should pay the balance only. Hearing this, Ratanji was rather puzzled. He could not make out as to what Baba meant. That was the first time he thought that he had come to Shirdi, and how was it that Baba said he had earlier got 1 rupee and 16 anas from him? He could not solve the riddle, but he sat at Baba's feet and gave him the balance of the dakshina that Baba had asked him and explained to Baba fully as to why he came and sought his help and prayed that Baba should bless him with a son. Baba was moved and told him not to worry, and that from then on his bad days had ended. He then gave him udi, placed his hand on his head and blessed him, saying Allah would satisfy his heart's desire. After taking Baba's leave, Ratanji returned to Nandev and told Das Ganu everything that took place at Shirdi. He said that everything went on well there, that he had got Baba's darshan and blessing with prasad, but there was one thing which he could not understand. Baba said to him that he had got rupees 1 and 16 anas before. Please explain as to what Baba meant by this remark. He said to Das Ganu, "I never went to Shirdi before, so how could I have given him the sum to which Baba referred?" To Das Ganu too it was a puzzle, and he thought much over it for a long time. Sometime later it struck him that Ratanji had received some days ago a Muslim saint by name Mauli Sahib in his house and had spent some money for his reception. This Mauli Sahib was a well-known saint of Nanded and worked as a porter. When Ratanji decided to go to Shirdi, this Mauli Sahib had turned up at Ratanji's house. Ratanji knew him and loved him, so he gave a small party in his honor. Das Ganu got from Ratanji the yadi or memo of expense of this reception, and everybody was wonderstruck to see that the expenses amounted exactly to 1 rupee and 16 anna, nothing more, nothing less. They all came to know that Baba was omniscient, that though he lived in Shirdi, he knew what happened outside, far away from Shirdi. In fact, he knew the past, present and the future, and could identify himself with anybody. In this particular instance, how could he know then the reception given to Mauli Sahib and the amount spent therefore, unless he could identify himself with him and be one with him? Ratanji was satisfied with this explanation, and his faith in Baba was confirmed and increased. In due time, he was blessed with a son, and his joy knew no bounds. It is said that he had in all 12 issues, out of which only 4 survived. In a footnote towards the end of this chapter, it is stated that Baba told Rao Bahadur, Hari Vinayak Sate, after the death of his first wife, to remarry, and that he would get a son. R.B. Sate married 2nd time. The first 2 issues by this wife were daughters, and he therefore felt very despondent. But the 3rd issue was a son. Baba's words did come true and he was satisfied. Dakshina Mimansa. Now we shall close this chapter with a few points about Dakshina. It is well known fact that Baba always asked for Dakshina from people who went to see him. Somebody may ask a question. If Baba was a fakir and perfectly non-attached, why should he ask for dakshina and care for money? We shall consider this question broadly now. First, for a long time, Baba did not take anything. He stored burnt matches and filled his pocket with them. He never asked anything from anybody, whether he be a devotee or otherwise. If anybody placed before him a paisa or two, he purchased oil or tobacco. He was fond of tobacco, for he always smoked a bidi or chillum. Then some persons thought they should not go to saints empty-handed, and therefore placed some copper coins before Baba. If a paisa was placed before him, he used to pocket it. If it was a 2 paisa coin, it was returned immediately. Then after Baba's fame had spread far and wide, people began to flock in numbers and Baba began to ask dakshina from them. It is said in the Shruti that puja of the gods is not complete unless a golden coin is offered. If a coin was necessary in the puja of the gods, why should it be not so in the puja of the saints also? Ultimately, the Shastras laid it down that when one goes to see God, king, saint or guru, he should not go empty-handed. He should offer something, preferably money. In this connection, we may notice the precepts recommended by the Upanishads. The Brihadaranyak Upanishad says that Lord Prajapati advised the gods, men and demons by one letter, Da. The gods understood by this letter that though they should practice Dhamma, that is self-control, the men thought or understood that they should practice Dana, that is charity. The demons understood that they should practice Daya, which is compassion. To men, charity or giving was recommended. The teacher in the Taittiriya Upanishad exhorts his pupil to practice charity and other virtues. Regarding charity, he says, give with faith, and even without it, give with magnanimity, give with modesty, awe and sympathy. In order to teach the devotees the lesson of charity and to remove their attachment to money and thus to purify their minds, Baba extracted dakshina from them, but there was this peculiarity. As Baba said, he had to give back 100 times more of what he received. There are many instances in which this has happened. To quote an instance, Mr. Ganpat Rao Bodas, the famous actor, says in his Marathi autobiography that on Baba's pressing him often for dakshina, he emptied his money bag before him. The result of this was, as Mr. Bodas says, in later life, he never lacked money, as it came to him abundantly. There were also secondary meanings of dakshina, in many cases in which Baba did not want any amount. To quote 2 instances, Baba asked 15 rupees as dakshina from Professor G.G. Narke, who replied that he did not have even a pie. Then Baba said, I know you have no money, but you are reading Yoga Vashishtha. Give me dakshina from that. Giving dakshina in this case meant deriving lessons from the book and lodging them in the heart where Baba resides. In the second case, Baba asked a certain lady, Mrs. R.A. Tarkhad, to give 6 rupees as dakshina. The lady felt pained as she had nothing to give. Then her husband explained to her that Baba wanted 6 inner enemies to be surrendered to him. Baba agreed with this explanation. It is to be noted that though Baba collected a lot of money by dakshina, he would distribute the whole amount the same day, and the next morning he would become a poor fakir as usual. When Baba took his Mahasamadhi, even after receiving thousands and thousands of rupees as dakshina for about 10 years, he had only a few rupees in his possession. In short, Baba's main object in taking the dakshina from his devotees was to teach them the lessons of renunciation and purification. Postscript. Mr. B.V. Dev of Thana, retired Mamlatdar and a great devotee of Baba, has written an article on this subject of dakshina in Sri Sai Leela magazine, in which he says as follows. Baba did not ask dakshina from all. If some gave dakshina unasked, he sometimes accepted it, and at other times refused it. He asked it from certain devotees only. He never demanded it from those devotees who thought in their minds that Baba should ask for it and then they should pay. If anybody offered it against his wish, he never touched it and he kept it there. He asked him to take it away even. He asked for small or big amounts from devotees according to their wish, devotion and convenience. He asked it even from women and children. He never asked from all the rich for it, nor from all the poor. Baba never got angry with those from whom he asked Dakshina and who did not give it. If any Dakshina was sent through some friend and who forgot to hand over the same to Baba, he reminded him of it and made him pay it. On some occasions, Baba used to return some money from the amount tendered as Dakshina and ask the donor to guard it or keep it in his shrine for worship. This procedure benefited the donor or devotee immensely. If anyone offered more than he originally intended to give, Baba would return the extra amount. Sometimes he asked more Dakshina from some than what they originally intended to give. And if they had no money, asked them to beg or borrow from others. From some, he demanded Dakshina 3 or 4 times in one day. Out of the amount collected as Dakshina, Baba spent very little for his own sake, for buying chillum and fuel for his dhuni, and all the rest he distributed as charity in varying proportions to various persons. All the paraphernalia of the Shirdi Sansthan was brought by various rich devotees at the instance and suggestion of Radha Krishnamai. Baba always used to get wild and scolded those who brought any costly and rich articles. He said to Mr. Nana Saheb Chandorkar that all his property consisted of one cow pin, one stray piece of cloth, one kafni, and a tin pot, and that all the people troubled him with bringing these unnecessary costly articles. Woman and wealth are the two main obstacles in the way of our spiritual life. And Baba had provided in Shirdi 2 institutions, Dakshina and Radha Krishnamai, for whenever they came to him, he demanded Dakshina from them and asked them to go to the school, which was Radha Krishnamai's house. If they stood these 2 tests well, that is, if they showed that they were free from attachment for woman and wealth, their progress in spirituality was rapid and assured by Baba's grace and blessings. Mr. Dev has also quoted passages from the Gita and Upanishads and shown that charity given in a holy place or to a holy person conduces to the donor's welfare. What is more holy than Shirdi and its presiding deity, Sai Baba? Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all.
Sai Guru Var ki Paramanand Sai. Om Shri Sai Ram. Welcome to Radio Sai Global Harmony. Professor Jayalakshmi Gopinath, ma'am, it is a pleasure to have you here with us. In the Hindu spiritual tradition, among the 9 modes of devotion, one is Shravana, or listening to the glory of God. You, ma'am, have had a long association of almost 55 years with Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba. So our listeners who have tuned into Radio Sai today are in for a spiritual treat. Professor Jayalakshmi Gopinath is Principal, Warden and Head of the Department of English, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Anantapur Campus. But more importantly, she is perhaps one of the oldest devotees of Bhagwan. Ma'am, as you take a walk down memory lane, we would like you to open your golden casket of treasured experiences. Please tell our listeners a little first of your early life. How old were you when you came to Bhagwan? And how old was Bhagwan, physically I mean, when you came to him?
Thank you, Rajeshwari, for all that you've said. I was in my early teens when I came to the lotus feet. And it was, I suppose, late 1947. So we can gauge the age of Bhagwan. It was about 21 years, I think.
Yes.
Bhagwan should have been that.
Okay. Your tryst with God, did you sense it coming or did it happen unexpectedly? What brought you to Bhagwan?
Well, I cannot call it mere chance. It must have been divine design. When Father had come preparatory to retirement to settle down in Bangalore, I was still studying, so I was with my parents. My father would go every day on walks, and there he met a person one day who told him about Bhagwan Baba and that he was residing in the house of Srimati Sakamma, the coffee magnate. Father himself, well, I suppose so, had certain occult powers. He could hypnotize, he could cure certain diseases, and it was ours was a very pious family. So Father got interested, and then he said, well, let me know where he lives, give the address, we would like to go. That's what Father, Mother and I went to Srimati Sakama's house for the first time.
Did you feel at any time during your early childhood a kind of a seeking for God, which you think brought you to Bhagwan?
Yes, yes. It might seem very funny. As a little child, I had an idol of Sri Krishna, of clay. Somehow I would fondle it, I would take it to my bed, even when I slept. And Mother, I suppose, didn't say anything. She sort of indulged me. And for a long time, that attachment to Krishna and the idol was there. Apart from that, our family itself was so very devoted, and they hosted the sadhus and sons in our house. So I suppose that must have affected me.
All these things together.
Yes, yes. Yes. To love God.
Yes, it fostered.
Yes,
kind of.
To merely love him, yes. Not ask him for this or that.
Yes.
And that is how when we saw Bhagwan Baba, well, I don't know, child. There was something that happened to me. It was totally subjective. A tremendous ecstasy. And my eyes filled with tears. Baba was very fragile at that time.
An instant recognition at that time?
Because, well, I did feel
felt the experience of ecstasy immediately,
yes,
on seeing him.
Immediately as I saw him. And when he looked at me, in that he threw a rose at me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was enough, you see. And he was very kind to my father. He took him aside and spoke to him. And I suppose that day sealed the bond between divinity and us. And throughout it has been that.
You must have visited Prashanthi Nilayam in the 50s and 60s several times.
Well,
what was Puttaparthi like in those days, ma'am?
Well, we were there during even the old Mandir times.
So what was it like, Puttaparthi?
Oh, the old mandir then was a very, very small building of rough stone.
Mm-hmm.
And Bhagwan's residence itself was none too unenviable.
Okay.
And it was all wilderness, all around. And what Prashanta Nilayam is today, you cannot imagine what it was in those days.
What was Bhagwan's daily routine like in that glorious past?
In the old mandir.
Because you have been a direct witness to it.
Yes. In the old mandir, there wasn't anything like direct routine. Baba is always manifested and every day it's novel.
Mm.
And early morning, of course, then at that time we didn't have suprabhatam. Although we were just a handful of devotees, a very small place, the old mandir. And as usual, the discipline, the men aside and the women aside, that is it. They would not
on
come
either side, yes.
Yes, they would not come together that way. And early morning, as soon as we got up, well, I can't describe to you where most of us, when we were in a state of heightened bliss, which perhaps the Bhagavata, you see, relates about Sri Krishna and his devotees. I don't know. And it was so with me. And Baba would be up early.
At around what time?
Well, we would all be...
Have a regular
yes,
routine
around 5
for
would be up.
Oh.
And Baba would be there. No such thing like darshan.
Okay.
He would be out of his room. The room...
So everybody just spent time with Swami all
yes,
throughout
he,
the day.
Yes, he would be moving amidst us.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd all be standing. Standing and just looking at him enraptured.
Oh, yes.
That's what it was. And then he would play with us. And bhajan time, he would sing with us. Many a time, Bhagavan has sung along with me during bhajan times then. And the altar, of course, was on the platform. And one, any devotee could go clean it up and keep it in shape. And one little experience I can tell you of those days.
Yes.
We had come, after we went to Srimati Sakama's house, many a time for darshan. Bhajans would be held there. Baba told my father, come to Puttaparthi. It was not Prashanthi Nilayam then.
At that time, yes.
Puttaparthi. So once during my holidays, we thought we would make the first trip. And the three of us went. In those days, Bhagavan would be standing right at the portico of the mandir to receive every devotee.
Each and every person.
Each and every
whatever
devotee.
Time they came.
Whatever time. And then he received us. We were so happy. This experience of mine...
Was that your first visit, ma'am?
At the very first visit. And we didn't know that at that time, Baba would give interview to devotees. We were not aware of it. So it was time for us to leave after a few days. And I didn't know. At that time, sort of I was motivated to clean the altar... And then put the wicks in order and then cut it. And then if the oil wasn't there, to pour it. And if I could confess, there was a curtain, you see, which was covering the altar from the rest of the place. And nobody could see.
Mm-hmm.
I would go and hug Shirdi Baba's idol. This is a secret. And I would feel so happy. And that day I didn't know my parent, father and mother had been called for an interview. I didn't know that. Then I was cleaning
the
altar.
So you were oblivious of other things, happening in front of the curtain.
I didn't know, Rajeshwari, this was the thing. And as I was cleaning, some devotee came and said, because Baba calls me Jayama, that is not actually the way I was called by my parents.
But that's how he fondly refers to you all.
Yes. And they said, what is it? Your parents have gone for and didn't you go? I said, I don't know. By which time the door had been latched from inside. So something... terrible sadness overcame me. I sat in a corner and I was sobbing my heart out. After a little time, I heard my father calling out to me, Jaya, Jaya, come, it's late. Come, let's go. Then I said, I shouldn't go out with a tear-stained face. I just lifted my hot tear-stained face. The tears were just trickling down. And whom do I see in front of me? Bhagavan Baba. And he said, why are you crying? He said it so tenderly that afresh, the tears just came profusely. Then, what do you want, he asked me. At that time, you know, I needed nothing. I said, "Swami, I want your photo." I'd speak to him in Kannada then. Then he looked at me with such tenderness and then he said, "You want a photo? If you put the photo in water, it gets dissolved. If you throw it into fire,
it gets burnt
to ashes. If you tear it, it becomes fragments. Why do you want to have a photo? Keep me in your heart." Young as I was thrilled.
Yes.
And of course, afterwards, he materialized a small photograph and gave it to me. It is with me even today.
So that was your small private
interview. The very first gift that Baba gave me. And that was the first one.
Ma'am, what are your feelings about what Bhagwan was then and what he is now, outwardly at least?
He is the unchangeable one. It is just circumstances have changed.
Yes.
And the devotees now are coming in
huge
great numbers.
Yes.
And there are so many things that Baba has taken upon himself. There in the old mandir, it was entirely a personal contact between God
and the devotee.
It was just a state of absolute enchantment. That's what I could call it. And another thing which comes to my mind, we used to come to Puttaparthi. My mother had left for Delhi. Mm-hmm. Because my second sister was about to deliver. Father and I were at home. Father, you see, he also became crazy about Bhagavan. So one day he said, "Let us go to Puttaparthi." Oh, I was overjoyed. And then we came.
Where were you when you came to Puttaparthi? You were in Bangalore then?
I was in Bangalore. And we alighted. Again, Baba was at the portico. He took us inside. And there in front of the altar, Baba just stopped. So naturally, Father also stopped. I also stood there. Baba looked at me and said, "Sing." I used to be nervous to sing, so I didn't know. But Baba encouraged me and said, "Sing." And he liked certain songs which I was singing. So I started one song. And as I was singing, I was amazed. And there are a few persons who had collected there. They were amazed to see that the garlands which were put on Shirdi Baba and our Baba, the life-size photographs.
Satya Baba.
Yes. They had garlands right from the top to the toe. First, Shirdi Baba's garlands started to sway, then it gained momentum. It swayed and swayed and swayed so forcibly that all the garlands snapped and fell down.
So this is while you were singing?
While I was singing. And my hair stood on ends. Baba looked at me very meaningfully. And then he said, "Sing another song." So now, of course,
Which was the song, ma'am, which you sang?
He liked Purandaradas's kirtans and Mirabai's.
So that's what you were
He would ask me to sing. And this was Mirabai's. And another song, he said, I started. And the garland on our Baba's picture, the same thing was repeated, swaying, swaying, and then gaining momentum, it snapped and fell down. Baba looked at me again very meaningfully. Then I wanted to stop. He said, "Sing." I sang a third song, and the garlands around the silver idol of Shirdi Baba, slowly they rolled down.
So it didn't snap this time?
No.
It just rolled down?
Just rolled down. And I suppose that was the end of that particular experience. And I knew Baba was very happy.
Yes.
And of course, as far as I was concerned, I was in the heaven of my delight.
Ma'am, by the way, I remember you telling us that you won the first prize in a music competition organized by Bhagwan in the old mandir. Tell us about it.
This was, you know, something impromptu. It came all of a sudden. Parents were to follow. I came first with some devotees. And right as I alighted, they told me a music competition is being conducted by Bhagavan Baba. Well, I thought, it's all right. Then immediately one person came running to me and said, "Swami is calling you."
Mm-hmm.
I'm always very nervous to sing in the presence of Bhagavan. I felt a sort of a quiver. Then as soon as he saw, it was The mandir was not like this then. It was a little different. It was not so polished. There weren't these embellishments.
So this is not in the old mandir?
No, this is in the new mandir.
Okay.
New mandir. Of course, the altar had the life-size pictures of Bhagavan. And there now, where is the chariot? There Bhagavan was sitting as a judge. And men and women, or boys and girls, whom he had asked to sing, had to go there, sit there, and sing through the mic. So after some had sung, both men and women, he called me. I used to always quake when Baba called me to sing. Then he said, sit down, sing. And he named the songs.
Which were the songs?
This was again Meera Bhajans. I sang the song, and then there were a few more participants. At the end of it all, well, I never expected. Baba announced that I had got the first prize, and even today I have it with me. It's a lovely silver cup and saucer, which is tinted with gold inside. And then when he gave it to me, he told me, Jayamma, drink milk out of this.
Ma'am, what did Bhagwan say to you all in those days about his life and mission? Did he say anything at that time?
Well, sometimes, yes, occasionally, if the circumstances sort of motivated Bhagavan to say these things.
So he did speak about
his
life.
Especially, I have seen his grandfather. I think then he must have been about 105 years old.
When you saw him?
I've seen him. He used to come there occasionally to the old mandir. Then the new mandir wasn't there. Gaunt, very tall, gaunt. He had a personality of his own, even at that age, as if he's one of the chief persons in the village. Oh, it was a beautiful thing. He would come with a stick, and somebody would help him, and they would put a chair in the outside enclosed, that longish type of enclosure where the altar was, and he would sit down, waiting for his divine grandson. Swami would come so quickly from his room, as he was rushing forth to meet this human grandfather. And he would go to him, clasp his hands, and I've seen that grandfather literally hugging him.
Oh, really?
It used to be a wonderful sight.
Bhagwan has said in, say, I think in some private discourses that his grandfather was the only person who really recognized his divinity.
Yes, that's what is said.
Yes.
And we could see this interaction. There definitely was a divine bondage between the grandfather and the grandson. And in those days we used to have, even, you know, during Dasaras and Swami's birthday, procession of Swami in a flower-bedecked palanquin. We used to have that. And those days, Swami has given darshan of the avatars to so many devotees. Well, we ourselves have seen once, when the palanquin, you see, the people carried Swami, the devotees, and then the procession came back to the mandir, old mandir, and they kept the palanquin down, and Baba got off the palanquin, just shook his robe. I was a witness to it.
This was
was in the old mandir.
Old mandir.
And from his robe, just vibhuti, just fell off in flakes, to such a distance it spread that people started gathering it. And right on his forehead, there would be thick flakes of vibhuti then, if he came back from the procession. And he would just do this, and it would fall. And he would take the flowers, so many of these petals of these flowers, he would take it in both his hands and just throw
them.
They would get transformed into medallions. And my mother got one such medallion, very significant. My father's name was Keshav Vittal. He was called Vittal Rao. On one side is Bhagavan Baba. On the other side is Panduranga Vittal.
Okay. So then each medallion had a different deity on it?
Different deities. Okay. Different deities.
Ma'am, tell us one of your most precious experiences that speaks of Bhagavan's glory. Any one of the really precious
There are quite
ones.
A few, Rajeshwari. I can just mention two. Sakamma, she was very devoted to Swami. She looked after Swami like her own son. He also loved her. P. pure soul. But some of it happened we do not know divine destiny or our own karmas come in the way. When Baba went to Madras to a devotee's house, where the wife was a great devotee, she was in trouble. At that time, of course, my father also was there, and Nagamaniamma of those days.
Yes.
She was a great devotee. And there was one Thiruvengadam Shetty, and there was Sakamma, and there was this gentleman, one Neeladri Rao, in whose house Baba was residing then.
When he went there.
Of course, we did not seek out for the reason. We are all ignorant human beings. We are all vulnerable.
Yes.
And this Neeladri Rao, the Sakamma and Thiruvengadam Shetty, somehow, I don't know what happened, they separated from the fold, Sai fold.
Including Sakamma.
Yes. She was a long-standing devotee. The ones who stuck at that time were my father and Nagamaniamma. Well, all this was over.
Mm-hmm.
When Nagamaniamma was still, of course, she always loved him. Even in the end, she came to me, came to Swami afterwards. Sakamma was, she had a lot of faith in my father. So she used to tell him, this mandir, small mandir, old mandir, poor Swami, so cramped up. You know, it was a crude stone building. Baba's room was so small, he didn't even have interconnection between his living room and the bathroom. No privacy for Baba. Mm-hmm. Even when he went from his room to the bathroom, he'll all be standing there.
Ooh.
It was a sad thing. So she said, why not we put in effort, collect some contribution, and build a good spacious mandir for Bhagwan. That is how it started.
So at that time she was still in, yes, Swami's fold.
Yes, that's how it started. Father took it up, and some people seemed to have contributed. One among them at that time, and he was still a devotee, was this Thiruvengadam Shetty, a very rich person, Vaisya merchant.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was over. It's a big, I'll cut it short. Then the new mandir was opened in 1950. 1952, my uncle, Dr. Prasanna Simha Rao, who was the chief surgeon in the Victoria Hospital, who had come to Swami when he had paralysis, he was a devotee. He and my aunt, we were all in Bangalore then, father had settled down there after retirement. So they said they would like to have Baba's darshan. My parents, well, at that time they said, well, they could go. And I said, I will go with them. So they took me with them. Oh, this was something. It's made an indelible mark in my mind. I can never forget it. The mandir was plain then, the new mandir. It didn't have all these curves and these embellishments and all that.
Yes.
Baba was standing. It had a portico. And you know the front veranda as it is.
That has remained.
Remained, but it wasn't done up so well.
Mm-hmm.
It was just cement.
Yes.
And Baba had come down. He was standing in that veranda. He gave an interview to my uncle and aunt. I was standing there. He didn't call me for the interview. Then there were some others. And devotees, you see, they were so happy that the new mandir had come up. So some of them expressed, as Bhagavan is standing as Swami, how beautiful this mandir is. And some devotees, you see, they may cast some aspersions. And they said that this mandir would not come up over 1 foot wall.
Yes.
Yeah, that's such arrogance.
Time.
Yes, they said it.
Before the construction.
Yes. And then they said, Swami, how stupid and ignorant they are. What a beautiful mandir has come up. Swami made a wonderful declaration. The whole world should know about it, Rajeshwari. He was standing there. He became very solemn. And sometimes there was such a change between the Baba who would play with us and talk with us and the Baba who became absolutely divinity personified and sort of pulled himself to that majesty. So that look was on Swami and there was a far off aloofness in his eyes. And then he said, let people talk. They do not know. I just have to clap my hands and a whole mandir will come up. Everything is in these hands. and that declaration he made so loudly, I suppose it went home to all of us. It sort of, made our hair stand on end. Just imagine. He doesn't need us.
Yes.
We think we are doing. He's getting it done by us to get us that fulfillment, that is all.
Yes, to give us the satisfaction that we have contributed.
Yes. And as he said this, he went on repeating it. I have everything. Everything is in my hands. And somehow he felt detached from the human beings, those of us who were standing there, and slowly walked off, climbed the steps and went to his room. Yes. This has made a tremendous impression upon me.
It's really a startling
statement.
Isn't
it so?
Yes, ma'am.
That is it.
Once, many years ago, you were asked by Bhagwan to translate for an interview which Bhagwan gave to Mr. Howard Murfitt.
Ah, yes.
After you returned to Anantapur,
yes,
you shared with the students,
yes,
and I was also a student then, so I remember this. You shared with the students some of the profound truths uttered by Bhagwan during the interview.
Yes.
Do you remember some of them, ma'am?
Oh, yes. That was another incident where the small interview room at that moment lost its contours. And it became something as vast as space because of the things that Swami said and he uttered. Mr. Murfitt asked this question. Swami, you had incarnated as Shirdi Baba and now you are the reincarnation of that deity 18 years later. Swami, where were you during the short span of 18 years? Where was I?
18 years, ma'am. 8 years.
8 years.
Eight years. Yes.
Then Swami said, I permeated the whole universe. There is no such single place for me. I was the whole universe. This he uttered again with such solemnity that again I staggered with this answer. And this went on. This was one of the most important things.
Did he not just during this interview, but at any other time in your own experience with Swami, ever reveal to you that he is an incarnation of Shirdi Baba?
You mean personally to me?
Or when you were maybe a witness to it? Did he ever say anything?
Well, not personally to me.
Oh.
This again, I could date it back to about 1954.
Mm-hmm.
In the new mandir.
Yes.
Baba then was not giving public speeches. Small circles he would call and just give them these precious jewels of spiritual truths.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be one among them in the crowd. There was one lady, Rajeshwari, one Brahmin lady. She started to believe in Baba so much, and we could see the transparent love she had for Swami. She was an elderly lady. And her husband was a famous scientist. Then we didn't have rooms in the new mandir also.
Mm-hmm.
So if devotees had to come, they would have to get these tattis, bamboo tattis as we call them. In Telugu they say tadakalu.
Yes, makeshift walls.
Something like that,
A whole sheet.
Pleated bamboo strands made into a sort of a thing,
wall,
It's a slim wall-like thing.
Yes.
We had to get them, and there would be many people who'd help.
Oh, then you had, you made a...
So sort of a living shelter, and a little bathroom, etc., etc. That's the house, the devotees, because there was nothing whatsoever except the plain mandir. And she, we were also then when she had come. She was a very orthodox Brahmin.
Mm-hmm.
Very orthodox. And people were making fun of her. Because once she would have her bath, go to Chitravati and have her bath, she would come with a wet sari, and she wouldn't come out lest other people touch her, and it contaminates her. And even to her husband, when she had worn this wet sari, and that is the way it was, the ritual, she would make him stand at a distance and keep his foot on the floor. Never give it into his hand. Well, over and above this, she used to cook, and she would be very fond of sending, we used to send in those days, very fond of giving whatever she has cooked to Swami. So Swami used to eat in the left-hand side of Prashanthi Nilayam, not the right hand now, as is his residence.
That
of course, it has changed now. It has gone to the auditorium. Mm. Right-hand side, he would reside
of
afterwards.
Of the mandir.
Mandir.
Yes.
And the left-hand side, you see, the middle floor.
There was the dining hall.
Swami's residence. He used to live there, and the dining hall, etc. And only some people who were given permission could take the food up, and there would be his sisters who would serve him. So this lady, she would cook, if I could call it in Kannada terms, muddy.
Mm.
Muddy, acharam.
Observing the ritual.
Yes, acharam. And with that sari, she would take, and like this, like she would sort of cover if anybody came near her, she would walk up the steps and place it. Swami tantalizingly, he would come near her and said, Chesko, putting out his feet. She would say, Ledu, Swami. She wouldn't touch Swami's feet.
Because of the muddy.
Because of the muddy and the acharam. Swami would laugh and he would indulge her. And people thought how silly she was. Imagine not touching Swami's feet. Could there be greater blasphemy?
Mm.
But she never bothered. Never bothered. She just observed her rituals most sincerely. So we never expected it one day. It was Ekadashi. And in the morning bhajan, some of us would sit in front. And to my utter discomfiture, Swami would make me sing. And this lady also, that day muddy, Ekadashi. She would not take even a drop of water. She sat apart. And you know what Swami did? These are the things I've learnt from divinity, you know. How true he is. Satya, dharma, shanti, prem. He's a very concretization of it. So from childhood, I'm indebted to my parents for having brought me to God. So he came in, Swami came in. He saw this lady sitting a little apart. And then he told the devotees, make place for her.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. See, people were sort of mocking at her.
At her.
And belittling her as being extremely foolish. And what he did, he told them, make way for her. And you know where Swami's throne is in the bhajan hall?
Yes.
On the lady's side, he asked her to come forward and sit near his throne.
So that's amazing.
And then he told her, Janakamma,
oh,
on Ekadashi day, her name was Janakamma, on Ekadashi day, in the evenings, what were you doing earlier? Then she said, Swami, on Ekadashi day, she was very simple-hearted. She said, Swami, I would go to the temples and there would be Puranas being told by some pundits and things like that. I would go there, listen to it and come back home. You don't eat anything in Ekadashi? No, no, Swami. Not even a drop of water? No, Swami. All right. On Ekadashi days, you were listening to Purana. I will tell you a Purana today.
Oh.
My God. And then that day, you asked me whether he had declared at any other time.
Yes. About Shirdi Baba.
That day, you know what he did? First time, he was speaking to a large crowd. A table was brought, a mic was kept. And he said it. He thumped the table. He said, I am the Vedas. It was resonant, echoed throughout the walls of Prashanthi Nilayam. I am the scriptures. I am God. Take this opportunity. If you can understand what I am, well, make best your chances here. Do not carp and criticize and lose this opportunity. With in such a stentorian voice he said it. Of course, we knew it within ourselves. Baba had not declared it in public that he thumped the table. I can't forget it even today. I'm God himself. That was another declaration.
That is not at all a very common feature at that time.
That was the first time he was speaking to a large crowd.
Yes.
And the first time he was speaking, he made this thumping the table. Now you and I stand on a platform and say, I am the scriptures, I am the Vedas, we'll be pelted with stones.
Yes.
We were all dumbfounded. Yes. Yes. And just, we sat there looking at him. What shall I say? Not with full understanding of what he was, but absolutely stupefied at the tremendous divinity that was there in front of us. We couldn't believe.
Did he reveal to you all at that time something about the future, ma'am, at least, about what you're witnessing today unfolding before you?
Yes, yes.
Because I heard that Swami used to tell the old devotees about events that are actually happening today.
Yes, he has told us. Sometimes jocularly, sometimes seriously, he would say, seize this golden opportunity. A time will come when huge crowds will come to Prashanthi Nilayam and you will not have access to me. And still, more and more as time passes, you can only see the heads of humanity. You can hardly see me. You may just be able to see a little of my hair. Swami had such bushy hair then.
Yes.
And then he said, as still time passes on, I may have to fly in the sky to give you all darshan. He has made these statements, open statements.
What are some of your memories of Mother Ishwaramma and her relationship with her divine son?
I had a very close relationship with her. She loved me, I don't know what it was. What was the bond between her and me, I do not know. Whenever we would go to Puttaparthi, Swami had given her a room in Prashanthi Nilayam. And she was the one, the only one, not even the father, who could just walk up to Swami's room at any time. He would indulge her. Oh, it was so wonderful to see it. And Swami was always very troublesome.
to the mother.
No, as regards eating. He was such a poor eater. So the sister sometimes, whatever Swami liked, they would cook and bring it from home, from the village.
Mm-hmm.
My God, the way he would dodge them. He would not eat, he would not come and sit at the plate. And then were they to serve, suppose he came and sat for a few seconds, he will eat so little, push this aside, push that aside. And sometimes when the sisters got really tired of coaxing him, they would bring the mother. And then, you see, when the mother came, Swami, tinnu Swami. Yenduku Swami nu tinnavu. She would cajole him so sweetly with the love of her mother. And
why,
then,
why are you not eating?
Yes. And then he would eat a little. And he would go on indulging her. He would get lovely saris. And then all of them would be spread in the room. Ra, en kavale ku tisko. Whatever she lacked, she could take.
Mm.
And some jewels also he would get for her. He was very fond. I mean, I do not say in the human way. But divinity, I do not know, maybe. Well, this may not be a proper opinion, was indebted to the mother for giving him this divine body.
Maybe he was also, as he says, my life is my message.
Yes.
He was teaching us to revere our mothers in the same way.
And he revered his father also. Father also. The father was a wonderful person. We have known him.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he could speak Telugu, no other language. And he had a provision shop. And he would diligently supply the devotees because there were no hotels and things
at
like that
time.
At that time. And I think once in one of my talks, my father took to him very much. My father didn't know so much of Telugu, but somehow they could manage. And when we touched his feet once, with such humility, he said, "Why do you touch my feet?" Mm-hmm. And when we said, "You're the father of the avatar," he used to say, "I do not know. He is great. And he's for everybody. He is no more my son." This is the way he would say.
Very simple person.
Very simple.
Ma'am, you must have been present during the anointing ceremony.
Oh, yes. I'm anointed, Bhagwan.
Anything connected with that you remember vividly and then related to Mother Isharamma? No?
Yes. You see, on the birthday, it was there even in the old Mandir. It was a tradition where some elderly Sumangalis, devotees, they would go, Baba would sort of instruct them, plates of kumkum, haldi, flowers, fruits, and clothes for the parents, and go with a silver container, which we call, Kannada, or I don't know, in Telugu also, chumbu, silver chumbu, we say, big one. I suppose that's the name, if I'm not mistaken.
A container, which looks like...
It is made in the traditional way, the thing.
And like a small kalasha.
It's big. It's a big one. Big one. And then they would go, and the mother would draw the water from the well there, and then with the Purna Kumbha, and then, you know, putting those mango leaves and the coconut, it's called a kalasha. The mother and the father, and of course the elder brother was there then, Swami's elder brother. After the mother and the father, the elder brother and his wife, then the sisters, the two sisters. Mm-hmm. At that time, Venkamagaru's husband was alive. I've seen him also. And after that, Janaki Ramaya, who was still a young bachelor at that time. Mm-hmm. This was, you know, the hierarchy or whatever you would call it. They would have to be brought by the devotees with the reverence, with the village band and the Nadaswaram.
To where Swami was sitting?
They would be ushered into... That time there was an auditorium, of course. I should say it was a very crude form in comparison to this. And they would be ushered in by these lady devotees. First, of course, the Nadaswaram and the band. And the lady devotees who were, bringing plates of all sacred things and holy things, you see, items. Behind them, Swami's family would come, and Swami would be sitting on the dais. And at that time, all of us could garland him. So all the devotees would be waiting with garlands in their hand. And first, the mother would get onto the steps of the dais, along with the father. There would be one elderly Sumangali holding a silver vessel of oil, which has been boiled with various type of
perfumes.
Herbs. And first the mother, it was a sight to see. Swami would bend down, he said, from the throne, and she would take a flower, dip it in the oil, and thrice she would place it on his head, and it would follow. And in those days, some of the devotees also. So father and mother were called. With lot of trepidity, I was with a longing to do it, but I didn't have the guts to get up the rai, he said.
He called you.
He called me. And then I've also anointed Bhagwan. It was a wonderful sight. And the devotees, one by one, they would go and garland him. And up to the neck, you know, he'd be garlanded. And each time he would remove the garlands and throw them to a side. That was what it was.
Ma'am, I know from my contact with you that you have a very fine sense of humor. Did you learn it from Bhagwan? And can you tell us of some amusing incident of those early days which demonstrates Bhagwan's love for humor?
My father had a tremendous sense of humor. He has bequeathed it to his children.
So you got it from your father.
But I got it.
Anything relating to Swami's humor, you know? Because Bhagwan also has a very fine...
A tremendous sense of humor. I can tell you
one incident, amusing incident.
Amusing in a sense. something which happened at home. In those days, in the early days, early 50s, Swami would come and stay with us when he came to Bangalore. We had a cook, a long-standing lady, very good cook. She would cook the food with some other help. Swami, of course, he with so much of love, whether it was to his taste or not, we didn't know, because we cook Brahmin food. He used to eat it, and she had so much of devotion. And she was a virgin widow. And a Brahmin virgin widow, her sort of situation is something, you see, none too pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in those days, and she was, by the time, I think, when she came to us, she was about 60 years. And the head would be shaven off.
Yes.
And then she had to wear a red sari among us, the Madhva Brahmins, 9 yards, and no blouse. This is the way, you know,
in the tradition.
Women were sort of, I would say, belittled. Whatever it is. So, as soon as she saw Swami, I think all the privation she had suffered in her life, humiliation, frustration, just welled out and she sobbed. Swami consoled her. Then, as he would come, you see, say occasionally, he would go to her, he would talk to her and all that, and she would sort of have these dry sobs. Then his humor. Yemi, nearly leni tanko.
Tank without water.
Tank without water because of the dry sobs. Swami's sense of humor.
Just one or two very small questions. After all these years with Bhagwan, supposing you were asked,
yes,
who is Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba and what does he mean to you? What would you say?
As a child, being brought up by parents who are pious and religious, we have listened to many of the stories of the gods.
Yes.
And our own mat guru, they would come, we would host them, what we call bhiksha.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do the puja, though it was ritualistic, in a lovely aesthetic way. And this as from childhood to adolescence, I think, this had seeped into me. And mother would get up early, light the lamp, make the puja ready for father. Father would not sit and do the puja, but whatever had to be done, he would done. But he had a mind and a heart of gold, my father. It's not that I want to talk about my father, but I remember him with so much love and gratitude. What happened was, it had perhaps got registered in our minds that God is a supreme one and everything goes on according to his will. Then the question arises when we came to Sai Baba.
Hmm.
I mean, this was some of the very die-hard opinions in those days. Can a Brahmin, I'm talking very frankly,
yes,
can a Brahmin go to somebody, I mean, who's of a different caste, and such Brahminical rituals and rites are not performed there? How can they go and then worship him? These were the questions even raised by my uncles. My father had 8 brothers. And a very, I suppose, I don't call it a very rigid one, but truly Brahminical house it was. So that was a question asked of my father. And father, of course, did not bother about it. This was one side where our Brahminical family, etc., was concerned. So once, our mat jeer, as we call him, Swami.
The head of the...
The head.
Mat.
Well, he sent word, they have these divans, as they call them. They send their emissaries first to see if the house is comfortable, because they come with a lot of entourage. Many disciples will come. The house should have a well, because the Swami will bathe only in well water and all his disciples. So when the divan came, at that time, in our sitting room, we had just then gone to Baba, and All that I can say is, there are certain things felt intuitively. You cannot give a rational
definition,
analysis of it. Father was also enraptured, leave alone mother. And I, at my age, I don't know what touched the inner chords within me. Every time it was a feeling of ecstasy and ecstasy alone. How can this happen? It just can't be accidental. And so the Diwan came and then he saw this big and large photograph of Bhagavan in the hall. In the hall it is because they've got this sort of huge golden, what you would call, mandir-like thing these Swamijis have. They keep it in a big hall, lot of decoration and all that. So the hall was necessary for them. So he looked at this photograph and said, I mean in Kannada, I don't know who will understand it, but it would be nice if I say it in Kannada. Rai re, ee photo yardu? Sir, whose photo is this?
He was addressing your father.
My father. My father said, it is the photo of Sri Satya Sai Baba. And he said, Rai re, Swamigalu bartare, idana tegedupidi.
What is that?
The Swamiji is coming. Remove it.
Mm-hmm.
Father said, nimige yake adu? Aa taravalla neevu nanna kelabardu, nodukolona. Don't ask me these unnecessary questions.
Your father said it?
Yes. What else father said, you know? It's something, so I was the daughter of such a father. Then the Swamiji came. He had to perforce keep the whole mandir, etc., right under Bhagavan's picture. And of course, lovely puja. Even that, they do it a lot of devotion. And the Madhva way of doing it is, in the end, they keep jhula for God. And then they sing these songs, which are lilting and enchanting. They tie the bells, boy disciples, bells around their legs. They keep the star in their hands.
They dance.
They jump in ecstasy and sing. It's a very wonderful sight. So after the number of days that he stayed with us, he was about to leave. And then he called my father personally. I was there then. My mother was busy elsewhere. Rai re libanni. Come here, he called my father. Shall I say it in Kannada or just straight off in English?
Whatever we mean, because if you think there is something profound.
He said, you are the son of Beli Srinivasa Rao, a staunch Brahmin of the Madhva cult. How is it you are going to a Daitya? Daitya means a demonic individual.
So that is how he addressed.
Yes, yes. Father, listen to him. And then he put him a question, Father. Swamigale, could you tell me to what caste Sri Rama belonged?
Beautiful.
To what caste did Sri Krishna belong? Who was Shabari? Who gave to Sri Rama the fruits she had tasted? Can you give me an answer for that? Rai re, the adhika prasanga, he said. You're talking too much, he said. Then he said, all right, you are the head of our mutt. I will listen to you. But give me just one sort of mantra wherein I can distinguish Adhaitya from divinity.
Okay. He was nonplussed.
Nonplussed. And he said, don't ask me unnecessary questions. So the Swamiji was floored. So to all of us, Swami was God incarnate.
Bhagavan's story is unending.
Unending.
It is infinite in its dimensions. One can hardly exhaust its contents, but stop, we must for now. That is all we have time for, ma'am. But one last question, and you may answer briefly. What is your message to newcomers to the Sai fold?
Have faith. Unswerving faith. Stop the vagaries of the mind, which goes into unnecessary analysis, because our minds are very limited. Stop the mind from unnecessary reasoning. Have faith, believe, accept, and you shall see from day to day what bliss, what happiness we derive and how our character develops, wherein nothing bad can ever affect us. We can just cross over onto the shore of divine bliss.
Ma'am, thank you very much for sharing your very rich experiences with Bhagwan, with the listeners of Radio Sai. It was a privilege having you here on Radio Sai. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rajeshwari. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Soham, soham, dhyan karo. साई ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम आत्मा शिव परमात्मा
ब्रह्मानंद से हृदय भरो
ब्रह्मानंद से करो। सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे के सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे परम दया घन पावन हे परम दया घन पावन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे जगदोद्धारण कारण सनातन है।